The Israel Report with Rolene Marx.
Rolene Marx, good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you and to everybody participating in the hackathon. So exciting, and I'm so jealous.
Yeah, because you don't even know, there's still like waffles and all sorts of stuff happening this morning, which where they want to know, walk down. Anyway, we'll tell you a little bit later where that is happening. Rolene, lots of stories coming out of Israel, and it's been quite a big week, especially with the whole issue around German Chancellor Scholz and the situation in which he found himself with Abbas. Can you just give us a little bit of context and a background here before we talk about the consequences of this?
Let's unpack it. Let's start at the very beginning. So Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, was in Berlin this week. He was there to discuss and meet with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz as well as various other German leaders. Now, Abbas wants to push for international recognition of a Palestinian state, and he also wants support for recognition at the United Nations. Now, in a joint press conference after the two leaders had met, where Scholz had said to him, you know, while Germany does support your national aspirations, the time is not right for you to be recognized as a state, which is actually something that President Biden said in Israel when he met with Abbas just last month. And Chancellor Scholz also said that he rejected the word apartheid used to describe Israel, which of course would have gone down like a lead balloon with Mahmoud Abbas. They then opened the press conference to reporters, and because in about 2 weeks' time, we are approaching the 50th anniversary of the Munich massacre, where 11 Israeli athletes and their coach were massacred by Black September terrorists. These were Palestinian terrorists. Now, Mahmoud Abbas at the time, as a member of Fatah, which was the mastermind of this, was part of the financial strata of Fatah and would have signed over the checks or the financing for this operation. Now, instead of showing remorse or using the opportunity to apologize, which is something that a member of the Bundestag, the German parliament, said to him, you know, if you had apologized, you would have gotten a little bit of empathy for your cause. Instead, he said these now infamous words, which are just absolutely grotesque, on German soil, a country where any kind of Holocaust denial, any kind of Holocaust inversion, is the ultimate insult to the German people, who have worked very, very hard over the decades to come to terms with their role as the architects of the Holocaust, of the genocide of 6 million more Jewish people. And he said, we have survived 50 massacres. We have survived 50 Holocausts. Now, Scholz, when this happened, maybe he was stunned into silence. I don't know. He didn't admonish him. Something for which he's taken a lot of criticism, especially in the German media. In fact, one member of the German parliament, of the Bundestag, said, you should have booted him out immediately. Those were the words he used. And went as far as to say, these were the most horrific words ever said in the German Bundestag. Now, you and I can think of times when there has been some more appalling words, but these ones from Abbas rank right up there. And, of course, the fallout's been massive.
So let's just break that down, because to some extent the largest part of, I think the most significant part of this insult was actually to Olaf Scholz and to the German people, who have worked, as you've said, incredibly hard in rectifying, dealing with their past, confronting some of the atrocities. And anybody who goes to Germany, particularly Berlin, I think will see for themselves how Germany has not denied their responsibility. They've owned it, they've dealt with it, they've continued to own it, and in doing so have mended their relationship with Jews around the world, with Jewish people, and particularly Israel. It's an incredibly strong relationship that Germany has with Israel. So what strikes me is that it was actually a massive insult to their hosts, especially by bringing this conflict onto German soil unnecessarily. It just didn't feel, and it just didn't seem to be necessary.
Well, exactly. I mean, you and I have both been to Berlin, and everywhere you go, whether it's the Stolpersteine on the roads or plaques or memorials, the city is dotted with memorials. They're everywhere. And you really get a sense of, as you say, confronting the past and educating to deal with the future. Now, Israel's ambassador to Germany told the Jerusalem Post, nobody is in a hurry here to invite Abbas back anytime soon. So not only has he insulted greatly the German people, the Jewish people, because of course the fallout here in Israel was absolute outrage, which is to be expected. Mm. But, you know, he's harmed the cause of his own people. And yesterday the Chancellor phoned Prime Minister Lapid, and he said to him, you know, I am outraged and I'm disgusted. He said, I don't only want to address that publicly, which after a few hours he did. He said, I wanted to, you know, to talk to you personally, to convey my outrage personally. And the two leaders said, you know, the relationship between our two countries is so strong. Something reiterated by Germany's ambassador to Israel as well, the strength of ties between the two countries. I mean, the disgust for Abbas expressed in the German press has been extraordinary, as well as the European Union, which is also an element that we're forgetting, that the European Union has also expressed its disgust. And Germany summoned the head of the Palestinian mission to Berlin for a significant dress down. As a result of these comments.
So where I disagree with a lot of people is that there's been severe criticism of Olaf Scholz around what he didn't say when Abbas made these outrageous comments. I think he did say it. He just said it with body language. He said it very, very clearly. He might not have used words that a newspaper could quote, but there was no doubt as to exactly what his reaction was and what he was thinking, his horror at it, from the look on his face. I think he was absolutely shocked into silence. And I feel kind of bad for him because it put him in an incredibly uncomfortable position.
Well, that's the take out I had as well. I think, you know, often in life we've been in some kind of argument with somebody or somewhere where somebody said something and you're so astounded that you actually don't know how to respond in the moment, that you have to take some time, you know.
Yes, in fact, some of your best counter arguments you have on the way home.
Exactly. So you wait for the penny to drop on the asiman nafal.
Then you've got all of the brilliant answers, that things you should have said, but just actually were so astounded that you didn't.
Exactly. But the fallout has been
tremendous.
Massive. Mm. I mean, of course, we've got Palestinians cheering Abbas, saying, you know, you said the right things. And to me, this has exposed to many in the media, into the world, this is why we don't have peace. Mm. You know, we also can't forget Abbas's role in Holocaust denial, in Holocaust inversion. You know, he wrote his thesis all about Zionist collaboration with Nazis, and that thesis contains huge swaths of Holocaust denial and revisionism. And he's gone on to defend his thesis, saying, you know, I can publish 70 more books about this. Well, so this is like in his very, very DNA.
Mm. Operation Breaking Dawn, Haaretz tries to cast doubt on civilian casualties caused by the PIJ. Tell us about this.
So earlier this week, Haaretz published an article saying that there was an incident during Operation Breaking Dawn. Now, this is not the incident with the 7 children killed. This is a separate incident where they say the IDF was quick to blame Palestinian Islamic Jihad, but it was actually the IDF that had killed these children. But, you know, what always makes it dubious is they cite unknown or anonymous sources. Right. You know, first of all, it is Haaretz, and we know that Haaretz do have a propensity for sensationalism and promoting almost an anti-Israel stance wherever they can. So, of course, this has been picked up and gleefully run with the anti-Israel crowd. But on further inspection, first of all, it's a separate incident which is still under investigation. And, you know, when Israel does engage in these flare-ups, these conflagrations with our neighbors, and we have to establish who is responsible for which casualties, these things are highly, highly investigated. And we now have analysis published from the Mer Amit Intelligence and Terrorism Information Center. They work very, very closely with the army, with the intelligence. And their determination is that out of the 49 fatalities that were reviewed, at least 12 were affiliated with Islamic Jihad, 5 with Hamas, 6 from Fatah, and 1 from the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, an oxymoron if I ever heard one. 25 fatalities were civilians. And the majority of those were as a result of rockets misfiring or falling short. I mean, there was also the news crew that were almost taken out by a rocket misfiring. The footage is there for everybody to see. What is quite ironic is 2 Hamas operatives were killed by Islamic Jihad rockets as well. And now we've had some very strange behavior from Hamas this week. Well, you know, one reporting that the Al-Qassam Brigade, which is the military wing of Hamas, would not allow the Al-Quds Brigade to lay missiles in and rockets in their various positions. In fact, they confiscated the rockets. So we don't know if they're stockpiling their own or they're trying to maintain calm, because Israel now has instilled this very, very strong carrot and stick approach. And yesterday, I mean, you and I both saw Hamas saying that they are supportive of Turkey normalizing or going back to full diplomatic relations with Israel, which is just also absolutely extraordinary. But I wouldn't, you know, celebrate just yet and say Hamas are going all soft. You know, we also have to understand that this is a terrorist organization that is not above engaging in psyops.
It does seem very strange. That said, I still got the distinct impression that the last operation, Operation Breaking Dawn, somehow was good for Hamas because it removed the PRJ as the Palestinian Islamic Jihad from being that relevant in Gaza. And I just wondered if this is some form of movement or some form of shift. Am I being naive, do you think?
No, I don't think you're being naive at all. I think, first of all, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad do pose a threat in a way to Hamas, because they're very difficult to control, and Hamas is responsible for controlling what happens in the Gaza Strip. Also, public support in Gaza, and now over the course of the last 2 weeks, we've heard more civilians in Gaza starting to speak up at great risk to their own personal safety, saying more and more, we don't want this. You know, in the past, we have supported this. In the past, we have supported the resistance. But, you know, who wins when we have these kind of showdowns with Israel? It's not us, the people. Because we are the human shields. It's our homes that get hit because rockets are fired. It's our people that are getting killed. And it's you, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and you, Hamas, and you, other terror entities, that are profiting greatly. And enough is enough. You know, in the past couple of months, we've seen that We Want to Live movements taking to social media, saying that, you know, enough is enough. You're taking all the aid that is meant for us. We want to have electricity. We want to have jobs. I mean, they're not singing Hatikva anytime soon. Mm. I mean, let's be honest. But there is what seems to be an awakening on the ground. Now, we've had Israeli military officials also weighing in, saying that, you know, public support in the Strip is really, really waning. And when Israel comes along and says, okay, we're going to give you 20,000 extra work permits to enter Israel, to work in Israel, to earn salaries for your families, we are going to give you the fuel for your electricity plant, which actually is managed by the Palestinian Authority. Mm-hmm. We are going to give you more of this and more of that, but fire your rockets and start any kind of flare up, and we're going to take that away. You know, people are starting to think we've had enough of this. Mm-hmm. This, since the disengagement in 2005, has gotten nobody anywhere. And you know, I was thinking to myself yesterday. I was thinking to myself yesterday. You know, I'm getting very bored with fighting with anti-Israelists online. I want to see you come with something that is solutions based and peace based. Because we're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, and I think that frustration really does exist. Just to leave it on a positive note, Nick Cave is heading back to Israel.
Nick Cave is heading back. Nick Cave is a legendary Australian rocker. He's actually one of the most outspoken against BDS. He's been to Israel several times before, and despite incredible amounts of pressure and intimidation against him, Nick Cave doesn't easily, into pressure. And he's headed back August the 23rd, everybody. If you want to get your tickets, there aren't many left. But really, this is turning out to be a rocking summer.
Absolutely amazing. That's where we leave it. Rolene Marks, thank you as always. Wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom. And, of course, we will catch you next week.